Hello, welcome to our show. This is Senior Perspectives, sponsored by the Senior Center and by MCTV. And today, our guest is an artist in textiles. It's Lolly Jacobson, and welcome to our show, Lolly.
Thank you, Jean.
Today, we're going to get some instruction about what a textile artist does. But first, I'm going to ask you, how did you happen to be in this area?
I came to Mendocino close to 40 years ago, 1973. I had heard a rumor from one of my students in Seattle that there was a room full of looms at the Mendocino Art Center. And I was moving down here with some friends. We were looking for property together, and I ended up in Mendocino because of the Art Center.
Oh. And there were some people. There was Dora Bothwell there.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you know
Hilda
Dora?
Hilda Pertha, Bill Zaka, Sasha McCopkin,
yeah.
James Maxwell, Charles Stevenson, you bet.
Yeah, all those
we
people.
We were quite a little gang in those days.
Oh, yeah. Did you take over when Dora quit?
Actually, it was a woman from San Rafael who was running the textile programs, and there had been another woman, Lucette Barth, before me. I never did get to meet her. Roz Watkins was the one that hired me to coordinate the textile programs. And then the College of the Redwoods was looking for a venue. So I came in 73. The college basically rented the entire art center in 1974. There was going to be a vote about which community college district we wanted to be affiliated with. So the College of the Redwoods was interested in securing the North Coast for themselves. So they hired everybody at the Art Center and all the studios.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that at all.
I have a lot of history. So we had weaving class, and we had fabric printing and dyeing classes, and the college ran that program for several years at the Art Center. In 1976, we were looking to do something that the college couldn't do at the Art Center, and Sasha McCovkin wanted to talk about apprenticeship. He was interested in maybe doing a ceramics apprenticeship program, and I was the only one anybody knew that had ever been an apprentice. I was apprenticed for 2 years in Copenhagen, Denmark, first to a weaver and then to a fabric printer. So they got me involved in the conversation, and the more we talked, the more I realized we could do this in textiles. So in 1976, we started a full-time program called the Textile Apprenticeship Program at the Art Center. And it ran for 15 years, and I think about 120 students went through. We had professional artists come for upwards to a month at a time as artists in residence, and they would teach. And then they would use the studios to do their own work, and the apprentices would help them with that.
So now you're not affiliated with the Art Center. You have your own.
I ran their textile programs off and on for about 30 years, I think. But then I needed to go to Seattle to take care of my mother. And so the last 4 years I've been off and on in Seattle, and during that time, and there were other people who had to step up. You know, you get burnt out after a while doing the same thing, and it was time to let somebody else try to see what they could do with the programs.
Do they still have an apprentice program?
No, that ended in 1996, but they still have classes. Nancy Collins is coordinating their textile classes now. They have a lot of silk painting and felting, and not so much weaving anymore. They decided they needed the space that was dedicated to the looms. You know, that's always a problem with looms. You can't do anything with them. They sit there. If you aren't weaving on them, they're still taking up the space. So last year, the Art Center sold its looms. And I'm with an organization called Pacific Textile Arts. We've actually existed for 15 years, but we always saw ourselves as a support for the Mendocino Art Center programs and the College of the Redwoods programs. But as the Art Center began to scale back, especially the weaving, we have started to step up. We got a couple of portable buildings from the school district. a year ago, I think it is, maybe a year and a half. So we're all set up now at the end of Laurel Street next to the Fine Woodworking Program, and we're starting to offer the weaving classes that the Art Center can no longer offer.
So you have room there for looms?
Mm-hmm, in our portable building that we got from the school district. Before that, it was just an old house with not nearly enough room. We do have a gallery space in the front room of the old house. Right now there is an exhibit of Oaxacan textiles that I brought back from a recent trip to Oaxaca, Mexico.
Oh. Do you have the land?
We bought that 15 years ago from the College of the Redwoods. The college, it's an old house, turn of the century. We think it might have been a Casper Lumber Company house that got moved there. We're not real sure about that. But the college had bought it hoping to do dormitories for the woodworkers right next door, very convenient. But then they found that the OSHA requirements were going to be too hard with the old house. So they used it for wood storage, and I've heard a rumor that they offered it to the fire department to burn down at one point. The fire department fortunately deferred on that, and so we bought it from the college 15 years ago.
Now what's in it? In the house?
In the house, we had a library, and now one of our portable buildings is devoted to the library. We have one of the largest textile libraries west of the Mississippi, possibly the largest. It's got several thousand volumes, and they're all Library of Congress and ready to go and on our website. And so now the front room has always been devoted to gallery space, exhibit. We have a kitchen. We have an office, and upstairs in the three bedrooms, we have studios. Two of them are rented out, and one of them is a special studio that has a couple of particular kinds of looms in it.
That sounds really nice, mm-hmm. But nobody lives there.
Nobody lives there.
No. I see.
Well, some of us feel like we live there, but.
What is your website?
PacificTextileArts.com. We're an org, PacificTextileArts.org.
Okay, because some of the people here listening to you might want to go mm-hmm. check out your website and see mm-hmm. what's on it and what they can learn.
Mm-hmm. We're also home to the Mendocino Coast Hand Weavers Guild, and they have a website named with their name too.
Tell us about what that is, hand weaving.
Hand weaving, in our case, involves looms, although we're not, we don't discriminate against anybody that does anything even remotely related to textiles, including bookbinders and paper makers and knitters and crocheters and quilters, and we'll take on anybody that's interested. And you don't even have to do any of that stuff. If you're interested at all, you're welcome. The Weavers Guild meets once a month from September to May on the fourth Saturday of the month, and they have a business meeting for the first hour from 10 to 11, and then they have some kind of a program. I just recently showed my photos from my Oaxaca trips and talked about what I saw down there.
It's called a guild. Do you still have apprenticeships?
No, not really through the guild, although I imagine privately some people would be willing to take people on. It's actually a larger organization, the Hand Weavers Guild of America, which started in the 1940s with the craft revival in America. And we have a California version of the Hand Weavers Guild of America, the Conference of Northern California Hand Weavers. And then our Mendocino Guild is an adjunct of that.
It sounds like you're all over the place with mm-hmm. things.
Anything having to do with textiles, I'm interested.
Wow, that's really interesting. You have some things to show, and maybe we should talk a little bit about this, because they're not made on a loom, obviously.
No. I brought my surface design things, my fabric printing and dyeing things. I have a personal studio on the alley between Fir and Pine called the Fort Bragg Fabric Studio, where my business, Mendocino Textiles, I wear a lot of different hats, has fabric printing setup. I do a lot of t-shirts and bags and aprons and things for good causes and businesses that I like, as long as their orders aren't too big. And then I produce a line of things that I sell myself. We have an open studio usually in November or December. And actually the studio is open whenever anybody can catch us there, but we don't keep regular hours, so.
Let me ask you a practical thing. I happen to know somebody who needs t-shirts. And it is a good cause because it's a group that calls themselves the Forgettables. And they're a three-instrument group that plays for the for mostly just at Sherwood Oaks and at the Woods.
Lovely. I'd be very happy to talk with them.
What would they have to do to get t-shirts? Would they just have to give you a design?
Right. It's helpful. I have a young studio partner. He's a 30-year-old young man who grew up in Mendocino, went through Mendocino schools, Jacob Huco. And he's a very gifted designer, but you have to pay him money to do the design. So it's cheaper and easier if you can come with your design already. And then we usually go to somewhere like Mendo Litho and get what's known as a positive, which is a clear black on clear. And then we can make a photo silk screen from that. So that's a little bit of expense. And then I generally encourage people to use a wholesale outlet to get their t-shirts. And we print them with a water-based ink. Most of the contemporary t-shirts are printed with what's known as a plastisol. It's a kind of a liquid plastic. And I don't know if you have felt t-shirts that have kind of a bumpy plastic feel to them.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
That's the plastisol. We use a water-soluble paint. It's basically a house paint acrylic with a special pliable binder. And it's a lot kinder to the environment.
Is it softer to touch, too?
Yes, mm-hmm, yeah. This is printed with the pigment. You can feel.
Oh, I see. I own some of these. I love them. Dish towels. Mm-hmm. They're so clever.
This was the first one. This was 10 years ago at the advent of the Iraq War. This is our Peace Pea towel. It got started with somebody saying something about world peas. Remember?
Oh.
The world peas thing. And then we just kind of took off. And we had these old lithos from a Burpee seed catalog.
Oh.
Wonderful drawings. They print so nicely, the old lithos. So that was the first one, and I did it actually as a Christmas present idea, and I happened to have it at my open studio, and it was so popular that then every year since we've had another design, and last year we had two designs. And then at some point, this one was a collaboration with Emily Whittlesey, a good friend of mine, and several of them. The Ants is another one that Emily and I...
I love that one, too.
Yeah.
That is so funny. I bought that for my son. He has a cabin on the Chesapeake that is new, and I bought him that for Christmas.
People have strong reactions to this one. They either love it or hate it.
Well,
I suppose depending on how many ants they have to contend with.
I didn't buy one for my sister, and she said, thank you.
She's one of those, yeah.
She's one that has a trouble with ants.
As time went on, I realized it was getting a little boring for me to print the designs, and Emily and I, you know, worked together several years. So I decided to invite artists who don't necessarily work in my medium on fabric to collaborate with me. And this was one of the first ones of those. It's a design that Larry Thomas did. He's a particularly gifted printmaker on paper.
I bought that one for my niece for Christmas because she has chickens all over her kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So chicken things.
Yeah,
over kitchen.
It's one of the most popular. And then this is another one that's quite popular. This was a collaboration with Susan Wood, who used to be director at the Mendocino Art Center. And she had found these crow images in a children's illustration, fairy tale illustrations. And then I worked it up into a composition. And
I bought that one for myself because we have a lot of crows.
Crows
around.
And ravens. You can't really tell whether these are crows or ravens, so they go well for both.
Yeah, well, I haven't identified the ones I have either. I don't know which
they are. We have only ravens here, but as you go further north, you can have both.
Yeah, well, I bought mine at a place called If the Shoe Fits,
yes,
on Franklin Street.
When Hillary owned it. Well, Carrie has the towels still, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see, we also do custom printing for other artists, and Pete Gailey is one of our artists that we print for a lot, and he has 3 or 4 different designs that he sells at Family Hands. And Emily is now branching out with her own designs at different places, so she has some at Corners of the Mouth and also at Doria's. And right now I'm talking to Living Light about carrying the vegetable ones.
Oh, yeah.
But Carrie will still have the chickens and the ants and the crows. And
what is Family Hands?
Family Hands is a little retail outlet on the corner of Redwood and Franklin near Purity Market, across the street from the Chinese restaurant.
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
Oh, it's a very elegant store.
Oh, good. Tell us about the silk ones.
The silk ones go way back to the apprenticeship program. In the apprenticeship program, we tried to do both woven and printed things that were sort of sequenced from easy to do to harder to do. So, for instance, the weavers would start by weaving little 12-inch by 8-inch pieces that we could fold up into a wallet. And in the surface design part, we did both weaving and surface design in the apprenticeship program. And in the surface design part, we did a line of scarves. In fact, this is one of the designs from that period of time. I think Elaine Lackey, who was my colleague and fellow teacher at the apprenticeship program, I think this was one of her designs, and actually it is just a branch that was laid down to block light on the silk screen, and wherever it blocked light, the paint will now go through. And so that's one of the silk scarves. And this is one of my more elaborate silk scarves, one of my designs. It's a multi-process one. So I start by dyeing or painting or either all in one dye pot or multiple colors. You can see there are multiple colors on some of these backgrounds. So I'll squirt and paint and dip the colors on to get the background. It starts out white. And then in this case, I did a drawing of a pine tree. I did this one when I was at the art center. There were these big pine trees there. I think they've been cut down since then. So I did some drawings of the pine trees and printed with dye, thickened dye, and then I went with a color remover. This lighter color back in here was a sort of a bleach thing that took out some of that color, and then printed again on them with paint, metallic paint. Here you can see some of that over here. And then ultimately gilded the lily with a foil that attaches to a glue that I print on.
Oh.
So that's...
That's beautiful.
Yeah, these, you know, these I can turn out pretty fast. My studio is actually a business, and so the point is to try to make some money, although it's not ever a lot, but it sort of supports my habit, let's put it that way.
Yeah, the materials must be expensive.
Yeah, well, you figure out how to get them for, you know, most of what I can get wholesale. This is one that is a velvet, that's a burnout velvet. Where the strong color is the velvet, and in the background is a silk background, and so it takes the color differently. And I buy these with the design already on, and then I just apply the dye. And they come white, too. The biggest problem is the fringe. It gets all tangled. All of these surface design things, not the towels, but the scarves, have to go through the washing machine a couple times to get out the excess dye.
I see.
So that can be a
challenge. So you buy something that already has this velvet, this cut velvet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you just make it colored?
Mm-hmm. There's a place called Exotic Silk down in the South Bay in Mountain View that has silk, wonderful silks from all over.
Hmm.
This one is called a charmeuse. It's kind of heavier. Oh, and this one is a China or Habitat. It's a lot lighter.
Yeah, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. I can see how you could do this one, laying the mm-hmm. the design on top. Mm-hmm. But then,
oh, it's on a silk screen. It's a silk screen.
Oh.
So it just has a single, I don't know if we can even isolate out a single branch. That's all there is on the silk screen. And then I just repeat the printing of it to get the multiples. There's four or five of them on there.
I see.
Yeah, I left out the important part. It's silk screen. And so are the towels. All of this is silk screen.
So I don't quite understand that process. Do you want to spend a little time on that? We have about 8 minutes left.
Okay, we'll go fast.
Or would you rather talk about something else?
Probably since I brought all these things, we should explain what the process is. So you need a frame, and it was originally stretched with silk, but nowadays we use polyester. But it's an open mesh. You can't really see it. It's not big mesh like window screening or something. But it's a fabric that paint and dye will go through. So we put an emulsion, a photosensitive kind of gummy stuff. It's like a white glue with used to be chrome, but now it's not chrome anymore, but it's light sensitive. We spread that over the top, and then in the case of this one, laid the branch right down on top of it. In the case of a t-shirt, somebody would come with a design. I get it on clear plastic, and everywhere that the black is blocks the light. So then we expose that screen to fluorescent light tubes a certain amount of time and wash it out, and everywhere where the light was blocked, where the black was or the branch was, the screen opens up, and everywhere that the emulsion was and got light, it's hardened on. And then you can get usually thousands of prints off of a screen if it's properly made after that. This one's probably had hundreds. These guys have all had at least 100 each. I print them in batches of 100, so.
Can you find them various places around town or just at your shop?
Toto Zeta, Chris Zeta has the scarves. She's the only one in town. And I have a policy of only having one shop in each town. I don't want there to be competition between shops. I used to have these at the Art Center, but I don't anymore. Ricky Two Gallery in Boonville has the scarves. The towels are more widely distributed. Real Goods in Hopland has them, Ricky Two has them, and we're just about to put up a web page on Etsy for them. We're talking a lot about a website on Etsy, and I'm sure we'll get to it any day now.
Yeah, it sounds like you're pretty busy.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your foreign time learning and in the apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Where did you stay?
I went for what I thought was going to be a summer vacation in 1966 or 7 to Denmark to visit my father's side of the family. And I ended up staying for 2 years. I found the work of a weaver that I really liked. Jette Gemsø is her name. And she took me on as an apprentice. And then when I was getting ready to leave, she said, well, what are you going to do now? And I said, I thought I would open a studio of my own when I got back to the States. And she said, what will you do? And I said, I'll do the screen printing and the weaving. And she said, oh, you need to do an apprenticeship as a screen printer. So then I was signed up for another year with some of Denmark's foremost screen printers. And that's where I learned how to do all the surface design part of it. Although I did have time at University of Washington and ultimately graduated with a BA in art from University of Washington. So I had the best of both worlds. I had school learning, book learning, and I had hands-on learning in the apprenticeship program.
Did you get to keep the things you made in the apprenticeship
program?
Oh,
good question. One of the weavers had a tendency to make her point about her apprentice's early work by burning it. My my master was not nearly so terrible. I did get to keep a lot of what I made, but a lot of what I made went to support the studio. Because I didn't get paid as an apprentice, but I got provided for. I was fed and you know, so.
Housed.
Yeah, and I got an education, and that's the exchange, is time for time.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to keep anything?
I came home with a couple of tapestries and some examples of things that we did in the studio.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had a house fire in 1975, and a lot of those things were lost.
Oh, that's a shame. Was that here?
Yeah, I lived on the Comanche Ukiah Road and for 30 years, and that was the house that burned down.
Mm-hmm.
While I was fortunately not there.
Oh, well, that's good. Mm-hmm. You don't live out there anymore?
No, I live just up the street on Laurel Street.
Oh.
And my studio is 2.5 blocks away, and close to the library, close to Headlands Coffee House.
Oh, good.
We really like being in town.
Yeah. Yeah, I moved back from Sacramento after being gone 50 years. I grew up here in Fort Bragg, and I live in town. I thought I wanted to live by the ocean, but turns out it's great to be in town,
you
know,
we're
a block from Safeway and, you know, near everything.
And with the Hall Road, we can go and walk by the ocean.
Yeah, that's what I do, too. Well, we have a couple of minutes left. What would you like to tell people?
Gee, I don't even know.
About living here on the coast, or it could be about what you taught people.
Yeah, I taught for years for the College of Redwoods. I started in 74 when they started at the Art Center, and I only left to go take care of my mother, and Janice Sullivan took over the weaving classes, and she's doing a fine job, so I'm not taking it back. So I'm officially retired. Although my real passion is textile history, and I am going to teach a class in textile history 14 weeks. It used to be a class I taught through the college, and I'm going to teach it at Pacific Textile Arts next winter, January through March.
How much room do you have for classes?
We had 35 people at the last Weavers Guild, so we were able to accommodate that. We can have about 15 people in weaving classes. It's all in the same room, and I figure I can have about 25 people watching slides for the textile history class.
Do most of them come because they're accomplished already, or are there any beginners?
There's always beginners, and they're always welcome. There's always, our classes are small enough, and they were at the Art Center as well, that beginners can always be accommodated.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that the Fort Bragg area is supportive for something like this?
Well, we have quite the reputation for textiles and for woodworking, I'd say. Those are the two big things, and ceramics and glass blowing is coming along too. So yeah, we are a mecca. We have attracted people because of the amount and intensity of textile offerings that are available here.
Okay, well, thank you. This has been really interesting, and we're out of time now, but I really appreciate you coming.
Thank you,
Jean. And I hope everybody will check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So be sure and come to the Senior Center for lunch. We have wonderful lunches there 5 days a week, and there are a lot of other activities. There's playing cards and playing bingo and singing and various other things you can do. So check out the Senior Center, and remember to support MCTV, because it really needs your help and support to maintain, to keep on going and be able to bring you programs like this. So thank you for watching.